We warmly welcome Katie as our speaker for this Monday Night Crew Miracles meeting on March 23rd. When you speak, it is considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted on oafootsteps.com as a podcast. To preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or an alias when you share. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Katie, take it away.
Hi, I'm Katie, compulsive overeater. I don't really think about what I'm gonna say anymore intentionally, because it feels like it's very, like I used to rehearse it too much. Also, my allergies are really bad right now, so if I have to stop and cough in the middle, sorry. As I don't know any of you, but Olivia, I guess I'll start with a little bit of a qualification. So I'm Katie. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago as a elite athlete. I was on the Olympic track in my sport, very serious. But I am not of small stature, and so at a very young age, I had already learned that if I was smaller, then I would be faster, and that meant I would be better because I could win, and I only had value if I won. That means I'm 16 years old, training 20 hours a week and eating 1500 calories a day, and I could not regulate my body temperature. I would shake from cold all the time. I was freezing. I still have issues with circulation in my hands and feet over 12 years later. So it's a fun little bit there for me. I kind of went through this anorexia, binge, exercise bulimia until my freshman year of college, where I moved 1,000 miles from home. Like I said, I'm from Chicago, but I now live in Colorado. And I fell down the stairs and broke my ankle 3 weeks after my aunt died, which was 3 weeks after my grandpa died. So this is all before Thanksgiving, my freshman year of college. And I go from being this, Olympic track athlete who's super mobile and her entire identity is this, to in a wheelchair. So I can't do anything. And it's the dining hall. And I'm sad because I've lost all this family and I'm just eating and eating and eating. And I remember looking in the mirror when I could stand again out of the wheelchair and just being like, what happened to my young body? Like, I'm 18 years old and this is what I see in the mirror, and just feeling so much guilt and shame. And the summer before college, my mom had been talking to a really good friend of hers who's like another mother to me, and explaining how I felt about food to this friend. And she's like, and I just don't get it. And her friend goes, I do. She should look into OA because this friend is in AA. And so I tried just reading the book and all that. And I was like, I can do this myself. I'm a student, I'm a student. And that did not work. And so the first Saturday after my Thanksgiving break, I came to my first meeting. I hobbled in with my boot on because my ankle was still broken. My friend went in with me because he knew I was scared, and they all thought I was a nursing student. And he said, no, I'm here for OA. And I sat next to a woman who looked like my aunt, and that felt really safe to me. And at my very first meeting, I remember somebody who has now become a very good friend of mine said, isn't it wonderful that we never graduate? And I was like, you're nuts. I want to get in, I want to get thin, and I want to get out. I do not want to be spending my Saturdays in a church basement with a bunch of women older than my mom. I just want to not feel crazy anymore. Fast forward, I graduated college on a Saturday, and I went to my meeting, and it was also my 4 years of abstinence. And I remember saying in that meeting, I'm so glad today that I only have to graduate one thing. And I am still so glad. And that woman I sat next to who looked really friendly, she's my sponsor. She's been my sponsor for 10 years. And you remember I said, I'm a student. I got an engineering degree. She was a teacher. And so she ran my program like school. And that was perfect for me. I would finish my fluids homework and then I would read my 12 and 12. I would go to class and then I would meet her at a coffee shop and we would go through my inventory. And I think that is what I really needed because I'm truly convinced that I would not have graduated college without program. And I have a really cool engineering job now and I really like it. And I'm really thankful that I get to live this life. I was listening to a friend speak the other day talking about how the gifts we get from program, and they said something different, but to paraphrase it for me, it's like when you put down the food, you get to pick your life back up. And for me, that's what I got to do, because I could have seen the food just steamrolling and steamrolling and steamrolling to the point where I was miserable and unhappy, and maybe even dropped out of college, which would have ruined any self-esteem I had left. And then I wouldn't have seen any reason to get better. And I'm so glad that I never had to go through that. So I did 5 years in college, and all five of those I did in program. And it was an interesting study in like ebbs and flows, because people would be like, your abstinence has to be first. And I was like, but my fluids final has to come first. So it was always a bit of a like a push and pull, but it did keep me sane through school. And then when I graduated, it was COVID. And so I was all of a sudden home, as we all were. And every meeting went online. But the nice thing about that was I didn't lose any of my community, because they all went online too. And I even gained some community from more meetings that I went to. But it was weird. I went from like living on my own in college, full control, good and bad, over what I ate. I didn't have anything that could be considered a threat to my abstinence in my house. I also didn't have a lot of money because I was a college kid, so I didn't spend a lot of money on things that would have been threats to my abstinence. And now I'm living with my older sister and my parents in a house during COVID, and my dad and my sister really like dessert. And we can't go anywhere, and we can't leave the house, and we have to make meals that everybody likes. And I maintained my abstinence, but I've moved out 5 years ago. Don't love figuring out the food when I go home, because I don't have the control over it. But I'm okay, because my higher power takes care of me. I go to my meetings, I talk to my sponsor, I stay connected with my friends, and my family has always been super accepting of everything in program. And so sometimes my mom will be like, can you eat this? Do you want to eat this? Will this work for you? Can we order something else for you? And that's been really great. So I guess that's most of my qualification. I always try to not spend too much time talking about food now, because to be honest, I don't really think about it the way that I used to. I write my food down at night when I think I'm going to eat, and I send it to my sponsor, and I commit to a friend that I've committed it to my sponsor. And then I go about my day. I wake up earlier than I would like to, but in time for my 11th step. And that's what really sets my days up. That's what I focus on now, is I get up and I do my best to not touch my phone. And I read from some daily readers. I write my first three steps. I reflect on my daily readers. I think about what I can control. I think about what I'm grateful for. Well, not decide. I think about what's best to give up to my higher power that day. And then I s move to my other journal, and I try some two-way prayer. I sit with the low lights and in the quiet and my higher power. And I sit there and I think about more things that I'm grateful for. I think about what's going to make the day good. Half the time I write the line of the song that was stuck in my head, because maybe that means something for my higher power about what my day is going to be like. And I really make an effort to sit there in my gratitude, because my day goes better. I feel more grounded. And even though I know this, I am an addict, so I'm a forgetter. And sometimes I'd be like, but I don't want to get up. I want to stay in bed. And then I go to work and I'm like, man, I rushed all my stuff and I didn't sit in quiet. And now I'm stressed and now I'm anxious. And so I also have an accountability buddy and another friend in program where we commit that we'll get up when our alarms go off. And it makes me think about what time I'm going to set my alarm. It makes me go to bed at a reasonable hour. This meeting is past my bedtime, but I'm happy to be here. And it keeps me connected to my program, to my higher power, and to myself. One thing I've thought about a lot lately is the term conscious contact. And we always really use it as a term for conscious contact with your higher power. But as somebody who has spent so much of her life trying to be what I thought was enough, trying to be what I thought everybody else wanted, trying to make sure everybody else was happy, I really take the time to think about conscious contact with myself. What do I need today? What do I want today? Because if I don't take care of me, I can't be of service to anybody else. I had to learn that what do I want and what do I need is not a selfish thought with the way that I'm phrasing it. It's more like, It's that whole cliche, it is like the oxygen mask in the plane. Like, if I don't know what I need to be okay, there's no way I can be there for anybody else. And I, good or bad, get a lot of my self-value from how well I can show up for others. And so I had to learn to show up for myself first, which this program has been really good at helping me with, and which my higher power has really guided me for. And so my higher power is not, as some people would say, God. I think that works for people. I grew up in a religion, and while that religion didn't traumatize me, it just stopped working for me at a certain point. And I couldn't divorce the concept of a higher power that I could trust with this deity that I had grown up with. I couldn't divorce the pronouns, I couldn't divorce the imagery. And so I spent a long time doing a lot of reading and work with my sponsor to figure out, like, what does my higher power need? Like, what can I trust? Because I was 5 years in, 6 years in a program, and I was like, I don't think that I'm fully surrendering. Why am I not fully surrendering? And it was because I didn't truly have a higher power that I felt safe to surrender to. And so we went through this whole book study, and my higher power evolved into just the obscure concept of the matriarchy. Because I just felt a lot of, I've had a lot of strong women in my life, and it just felt like that'll work. And then as time went on, it evolved more because that was still too obscure. It didn't feel personal enough. My mom's mom died when I was 7, and my dad's mom died when I was 11. So I didn't really get to experience them because we also didn't live close, but I remember enough of them that all they did was love me for who I was, for how I showed up. They were so happy to see me. They were so happy to take care of me. And it's so easy for me to believe that they want what's best for me, that they have a plan, that they're excited, that they want me to be happy. Because there is this part of me from the religion that I grew up in that I thought, well, I have to sacrifice myself because that's the only way to be of service. But my grandmas don't want me to be miserable so other people could be happy. That's not what they want. And so it's a lot easier for me to put down people pleasing and think about the best way to be of service while also being authentic. And my grandmas are very distinct. My mom's mom was Mexican and she had rheumatoid arthritis. So she had these beautiful, like cherry skin tone, but mangled fingers. Like her fingers were like this. And so I very distinctly remember what her hands looked like. My dad's mom was Irish, and so she had this super, super porcelain skin, but always a perfect French manicure. And so when I need to think about my higher power, I can imagine their hands on my back. And their hands are some one of the things I remember the most about them, and it feels the most powerful that they are supporting me, guiding me, comforting me, congratulating me, and or holding, like offering. What is your suffering? What is your question? What do you not know? And we'll take it. And by it, that's the easiest set of hands to ever put my troubles into. Because I remember being a little kid, and that's all they did was love me and take care of me. And I'm not a little kid anymore, but they will still love me and take care of me. And I noticed that my program shifted when my higher power shifted to a higher power that I could really trust and surrender to. And it became a lot easier for me, who has clinical anxiety, to say, you know, I don't really know what's going to happen, but it's not really any of my business. So I'm just going to do whatever comes next. And a lot of the time, that will come to me out of nowhere in the middle of the day because I will, in the morning, set aside what is none of my business. And then it's 2:30 and I'm taking a lap around the office and I'm like, ah, that's the answer. Okay. And that's really cool to see that proven time and time again and trust. Like I said, I'm a really anxious person, but 3.5 years ago, I quit my job, packed up my apartment, and moved across the country because I was like, you know, I'm not happy anymore and it's time to change. And it took like finding an apartment came together at last minute. I moved really fast, all this stuff. And people would be like, aren't you scared? And I was like, no, I'll be fine. I'm not doing this by myself. And I've always thought it was really amazing how, in those times of struggle where pre-program, the first thing I turned to was the food, was self-sabotage. The thing that I cling to now is my program. You've already heard me mention four people who have died. That's not even half the tragedy of my life, which I'm smiling, but it is what it is. My friend died when I was at my last job, where it was still COVID, but I lived alone and I worked remote. And I was falling apart. I could barely unload the dishwasher. I could barely clean my house, but I went to meetings. I never missed a meeting. I answered phone calls and I talked to my sponsor religiously and I stuck to my food plan. And I remember my therapist was like, "Do you know why you can go to a meeting and do service, but you can't unload the dishwasher?" And I looked at her and I was like, "Well, because I know that it could only get worse if I stop going to program, because I know what bottom is and I don't want to go back there. This feels horrible and everything hurts, but it'll hurt more if I don't call my sponsor, if I don't go to meetings, if I don't follow my food plan." One of my very dear friends in my home meeting always says, every estimable act leads to self-esteem. And when you are in the gutter, going to a meeting is what feels like that bit of self-esteem. And so I have had that 180 degree pivot from everything's hard, I'm just going to give up, to everything's hard, let me continue forward because it will get better with my program, with my fellows, with my higher power. And that trust has allowed me to live and continue to live a life so incredibly full, even though 16-year-old me probably wouldn't love the body that I'm in now. The truth is, this body doesn't need to wear five jackets when it's 30 degrees outside. This body climbs mountains. You know, she does all of these things and she goes to meetings and she's of service. And it's okay that she's not tiny. I don't want to be tiny. I want to be happy. I want to be recovered. And so I don't know how much I weigh. I know that my pants fit. I know that every year I put my jean shorts on for the summer again, and the same pair from last year fits again. And that's all I need to know. My weight, that number, that's none of my business. I said I'm a numbers person, I'm a math person. Like I said, I have an engineering degree. That means as much as I love numbers, they can hurt me. The amount of calories in something, the sugar in something, how much I weigh, that's not really any of my business. I'll weigh and measure my food so that I know what a serving is, but I typically don't read further down the nutrition label because I will do the math. I used to know exactly how many calories were in a handful of carrots, were in two eggs, two tortillas, and I could do the mental math of how much I'd eaten that day and how much I could still eat and not go over a tally. And so I don't look at those numbers. Those aren't for me. That's my higher power's problem. I have to get weighed when I go to the doctor. I yet see it on my discharge form and I go, "Okay, I can't. I know that that is not a safe number for me to fixate on." And so I don't. And that peace I feel about it comes from my higher power, from this comforting knowledge that the right things that for me will come to me and I will be the best version of myself that I can be to be of service to others. He said, "I've been an athlete my whole life. I've been able to come back to being an athlete, to racing, to work, like not as a high of level as I was when I was a kid. I don't want to do that anymore." But I do think about, okay, what would 12-year-old me have thought if I saw 28-year-old me and saw what I can do in this body? Maybe she would have been okay with her body and not gone on to become anorexic because she would have seen, "Oh, wow, she's strong and she's doing it, but she's not tiny. Maybe it's okay that I'm not tiny. I want to be strong. Because when I was little, I only wanted to be skinny. And now I just want to be happy." And that means recovered. Because without my program, when I'm in my disease, I'm not happy. And I don't know how to be strong when I'm unhappy. I don't know how to be safe when I'm unhappy. And so I want to be all of those things: strong, safe, happy, thriving, of service, kind, and at peace. I don't, now I really cherish that 5 a.m. time where I sit in quiet and peace and enjoy that connection with my higher power, with myself and prepare myself for my day. And with that, I pass.
Let's give our speaker, Katie, a big round of applause for a wonderful share. Thank you so much, Katie. Now is the time to ask our speaker questions. As we are still recording, we ask that you put your questions in the chat and I can read them aloud. You're welcome to message them to me directly or to the group. We ask that you do not come off mute to ask your question or to thank the speaker verbally in this section, as we don't have permission to record other attendees. We will allow up to 15 minutes for questions for our speaker, after which time we will have sharing until 15 minutes after the hour and then in our parking lot. Our first question, in what ways did you put the food down and pick life back up? What did that look like?
I think for me, it was just being uncomfortable for a while. My first day of abstinence was my first day home from college, and my mom set lunch in front of me, and it was half as big if I would have served myself. And she said, "If you're still hungry, get more." I wasn't hungry. And that was the beginning of it. And that summer, I just went to as many meetings as I could, and that was my last season racing elite. So I went to meetings and I trained. But for the first time in a long time, it was for the fun of it, not for the pain of it, I guess. So it just takes one. I still remember that bowl, that moment. Just takes one not bite, I guess, because it wasn't a compulsive bite. It was just a fuel.
Thank you. Do you maintain an active lifestyle? How do you keep the balance between the right amount of movement from exercise to anorexia? How do you find the balance?
The answer is yes. Right now I've been sick and I had surgery, so it's not as much as normal, but I love to be outside and move my body, and I think about my exercise now as meditative. And also, I don't ever want to say no to something because I can't do it. So my fitness goals are not a certain weight, a certain metric. It's just fit enough that the answer can always be yes. And that is so very different than winning. For me, it's about fun, to the point that last year I quit my favorite race because I was not well. And I knew that to push myself to finish would have been a diseased action. So I haven't really struggled that much with anorexia because I don't do anymore. Because I'm not doing the physical activity to find my value based on a result. I'm doing it for the joy it gives me and the connection I get with my friends.
Thank you. What was the song lyric you wrote in your two-way prayer, or a song lyric you've written in your two-way prayer, and how has your higher power used that in your recovery?
I don't remember the last one that I wrote, but one that has been in my brain a lot is from a Dove Cameron song, and it's "Turns out I'm easy to love," because I've been through a lot of rough patches with my in the last like year and a half, and that was like a little nudge of like, no, you're okay. You don't have to take on all of this other stuff. Like, look at all these people who do love you. Look at these people who are drawn to you. Look at the people who trust you. You're easy to love. And so that wasn't the last one I wrote, but that one goes through my head fairly often.
Thank you. And how do you affirm that I am enough during the day? How does this work in recovery for you?
I've got a couple different tattoos to help me remember, different versions of this. I wouldn't say that I think about it consciously anymore. But like, I don't know if you can tell. My hair is half blue. And normally I wear a lot of rings and a lot of necklaces and earrings. And so it's small things such as that I look in the mirror and I like what I see. And if I like what I see, then I realize that I like who I see. And then I'm just so excited that I like what I see that that ends up being enough for me. And so then it becomes, wow, I did this thing really well, or I got up when my alarm went off, and that felt like good. And so it's that whole esteemable acts thing and realizing, yeah, I don't have to be enough for anybody but myself. And I look in the mirror before I leave and I'm like, yeah, I like what we're doing today.
And have you ever gone through times when your conscious contact feels routine or distant? If so, what helps you reconnect with that sense of love and guidance from your higher power?
Yes, I would say yes. I think the most recent one was more, I had been reading the same daily reader for like 10 years. And so, as part of my morning routine, it just didn't feel, I wasn't really getting anything new out of it. If I was starting to kind of resent it, it was becoming rote. And so I switched to, it's not a program daily reader, but it's a nature-based daily reader. And my like challenge every day is to find the program message in, say, like the normie message. And it makes me think more about the contact because I would say like a year and a half ago, I was just rushing through everything and I was like, I mean, I know I have a higher power and I know what it is, but I'm not actually spending any time thinking or talking to it. So it's been the last maybe year and a half that I've been really intentional about that conscious contact. So I can notice when, like, oh, this isn't doing anything for me anymore. I should change it up. It's okay to try something different so that my program can grow.
And what is your favorite OA tool and your least favorite tool that has become essential to recovery and program?
I would have said before that I hated phone calls. I still don't love them. But I've got a couple regular people that I talk to that I really enjoy the phone calls. But I would still say it's not my favorite. Right now, I think my favorite is writing because of the conscious contact with myself and with my sponsor in how, or sorry, my higher power. But I do send my food log and my gratitude to my sponsor every day, so she sees it too. That one just feels the most concrete. Like I said, I got anxiety. My brain's a mess, but as soon as I write it down, it feels like, okay, the story's straight because that's what came out on paper. And now I understand what I was thinking. So.
Can you repeat the quote about esteemable acts, and can you say more about this?
Yeah. So I have a friend, and she always says, every esteemable act leads to self-esteem. And for me, that is, I got out of bed without snoozing my alarm. I counted out, like I dumped my snack out of the bag and put the bag away before I started eating my snack so I wouldn't go back to it. I made my bed. I folded and put away my laundry before it had been 4 weeks, like small things like that. And then you're like, oh, I did this. And they build. And so then it's like, oh, I got out of bed with my alarm. That means that I have time to actually sit and think about what my daily reader says and like write something thoughtful. Oh, that felt really good that like my handwriting was neat because I wasn't rushing. And now I'm feeling good. Like it's just, it builds these like little victories. And then it's big things like everybody was eating the cookies my friend brought in for Purim and I didn't because I knew that that was sugar I didn't need. But, and I didn't have to feel guilty about it. But that day started with getting out of bed at the right time and writing in my journal, and they built.
Thank you. How do you suggest someone release control over calories and numbers?
Well, you don't release it. Your higher power gently takes it from your clawed hands. Boy, God. That's such a hard one because I've struggled to not pick it back up. I wish I had some beautiful, thought out answer. But honestly, it's just none of your business. My calories are none of my business, and my weight is none of my business. I have a food plan that works for me that I enjoy, that I've worked with a nutritionist to get parts of it. To for you know diff like figure out what works for me. And I don't know how many calories it is. That's just none of my business. Sorry, I wish I had a better answer than that.
No, thank you. How do you handle program failures or disappointments?
I don't know that I would really consider anything at this point a failure. Even a relapse is an experience. And, you know, we talk a lot about in program how it's okay to look back at your past but not stare because your past informs your present, which is what drives your future. And so mistakes are lessons. Slips are data points. I think the only true failure is like fully giving up. But also, sometimes you need that break to come back. So I'm not really one who focuses on failure anymore. I used to be so stuck on that, and now it's like, what does dwelling on this do for me besides make me feel like shit about myself? And then that's going to perpetuate. Why don't I do something esteemable so that can perpetuate?
Thank you. What advice would you give to someone who feels like they don't have enough time for program?
Start small. You'll hear what people talk about. Like, if I heard what I do in the morning when I first started, I'd be like, I will never have time for that. But start small. I used to only write like what I was powerless over, what I had power over, and what laid my life unmanageable. Those three sentences typed into your phone could be 30 seconds. Just something small and manageable that you can repeat. And then eventually, you'll write six sentences. And then, if you want, you'll do a reader. And then you'll write a plan. And then you'll be getting up at 5 a.m. when you don't have to be at work till 8, so you can sit and stare out your window with your journal open on your lap. It's small. Just like we say, like one day at a time, it's one small thing at a time. Because there are definitely times when I feel like I don't have the bandwidth to do the program that I want to do, but I have a bare minimum. So just figure out what your bare minimum is, and eventually it'll grow if that's what your higher power has for you.
Thank you. What are some of the big program miracles, or sorry, what are some of the big miracles that program has brought you?
I think to sit here and realize that I really don't care about the food that much. I like food. I eat good food, but it's not my first thought. It's not my first turn to. And that is the one miracle that I was desperate for when I started program. The other miracles are this comfort and acceptance with myself as I am, and this ability to show up in a situation as myself authentically, and also see how that has a positive impact on others. Because I used to tear myself into pieces if it would make everybody else okay and not realize that that was harmful to all of us. And I've learned through program that whole like attraction rather than promotion, just show up as the best person that I want to be. And that will yield what is right for me in the world after that.
Thank you. And how do you release the all or nothing thinking?
Very reluctantly, some days. I've been in program and therapy long enough now that I can kind of catch it. Like, I'm on an anti-anxiety med, and it does change your cholesterol. And I had a health screening for my insurance, and they were like, your cholesterol's kind of high, and your weight is this, so you should blah, blah, blah. And oh my God, I spiraled. I was like, I need to get back to. I had just had surgery. I had just been sick. All of these things that mess with your body. And I was like, oh my God, I have to do all these things. And then I had this little thought, this little higher power thought that said, before you try and force yourself back into a workout plan and eating a certain thing, which sounds very much like 16-year-old anorexic you, maybe look up the side effects of your anxiety meds. Turns out, higher cholesterol is a side effect of my anxiety meds. That is why I've had perfect cholesterol for so long and now it's high. We do not need to end the world over it. But I had a day, let me tell you. But my higher power little popped in with that little like, maybe check this other thing.
And the last one I see in here, what would you say to your 16-year-old self?
It will be better than you ever thought it could be, even though it's not what you think it will be.
Thank you so much. Oh, we got one more in here. No, you did not miss it. Do you think you will ever be in a place where this part will just be naturally healthy? Oh, sorry. How long have you been in recovery? Do you think you will ever be in a place where this part will just be naturally healthy, or is doing the program a forever type of thing to maintain recovery?
I think the answer to both of them is yes. Well, first of all, almost 10 and a half years. If my higher power is willing, I will celebrate my 10 years of abstinence in the middle of May. And then the question, the second half of it was like, sorry, Olivia, can you say that part again?
Do you think you will ever be in a place where this part will just be naturally healthy, or is doing program a forever type of thing to maintain recovery?
I think my program is forever and it has become natural. I'd say I'm in a maintenance stage right now. I'm just reading a book with my sponsor. I go to one meeting a week normally and I keep in contact with like my core fellows and I focus on my journaling. I'm not currently working the program like my hair's on fire because for the first time in a long time, my life is okay. But the level of program that I have in my daily life now feels like the essential. I wear glasses, as you can see. If I don't have my glasses on, something feels a little wrong because I can see, but it's fuzzy. And so if I don't do my morning things, I feel like I don't have my glasses on. Something's a little wrong. And so it's just embedded in my life. And that's fine with me.
Thank you so much. That's all the time we have for questions tonight, but feel free to hang out after potentially for more after if there's more that come up. But thank you so much, Katie.